the headlines. Americans start voting in midterm elections that will decide the control of Congress amid a deep political polarization. India says that it will continue buying Russian oil as Turkey begins paying for some of its natural gas in Russia in rubles. And China calls on Canada to stop making remarks that damage bilateral relations after Ottawa accuses Beijing of interfering in its elections. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisu Mishahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Americans are heading to the polls in midterm elections that could see Republicans take over both chambers of Congress. Opinion polls show that Republicans are heading for a win in both the House and the Senate. A shift in power in the chambers would make Democratic President Joe Biden a lame duck for his remaining 2 years in office. Democrats have been campaigning around what they call a threat that Republicans would pose to democracy if they win, and Republicans have focused their campaign on such issues as soaring inflation and the scale of violent crimes. The Republicans gain a majority in either houses of Congress, it would be a fifth consecutive election in which a U.S. president loses unified control of government in midterm polls. Staying with the U.S. story, Joe Biden has sounded the alarm over threats to democracy in his closing argument ahead of the midterm elections.
Democracy is on the ballot. Political violence and intimidation are on the rise all across America. And you remember January 6th, the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked law enforcement, hunted down elected officials, erected gallows to hang Vice President Pence. Well, West's opponent, supported that mob. Who the hell do they think they are?
Also, former U.S. President Donald Trump says he is expecting a Republican victory in the elections. Trump has also vowed to make a big announcement next week, hinting that he is going to run for the 2024 presidential election.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House. I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida.
We have with us our correspondent, Ramin Mazahiri, who is joining us live from Chicago. Ramin, tell us more about what the opinion polls show and how reliable are they?
Well, that's a good question. How reliable are they? Should maybe start there. Since 2016, since Brexit, really, Western opinion polling has been exposed to have some major problems. And a lot of people in France, where I'm normally based, and in the United States, and in the UK and Canada, places like that, many people say that they don't even pay attention to polls anymore because they are so inaccurate. The reasons for that are cell phones, but also maybe bias of the polling agencies. Certainly in France, that's an issue. But what are the polls saying? The polls are saying that there's basically going to be a red wave. There's a red wave looming, which means a major Republican victory. And I think that this is something that most people will probably see as logical, because back in 2020, the Democrats were only able to win a split. They only won 50 seats of the 100-seat Senate. And in 2020, they had the entire establishment behind them, the corporate world, the Pentagon, the diplomatic world, the cultural world. And things are sort of, back to normal, quote unquote, in 2022, because Trump is not on the ballot anywhere. And then things have gotten, so bad here economically, culturally. In the past 2 years. So how could they possibly do better than in 2020? So there's sort of that historical overview. If we look even deeper, almost in every election, in every situation in modern and, going back a century in U.S. history, a sitting U.S. president, his party loses seats in Congress almost every time. This is something that is expected. And then you have this situation where economically this is the worst the country has looked for more than 40 years. So that's certainly going to be that's something else. So we're talking about historical trends. We're talking about the state of the economy. We're talking about the major difference between 2020 and 2022, and everything is sort of trending against the ruling Democrats right now. I think we should, keep in mind that America is a very conservative country. Their state governorships, it's 60-40 in favor of Republicans. Even Democrats are very conservative, leftists in the global sense. And then, what's the largest party in America? It's one that nobody talks about. It's independents. The independents outnumber now Republicans and Democrats, and independents are generally, rather conservative. So it's certainly many things are going against the, center-left party here in the United States. Now, if it's not a red wave, there's going to be problems. If it's not an outright Republican victory tonight or by tomorrow, it's going to get very ugly here. And one of the reasons for that is that the COVID era has ushered in a new era of voting, mail-in voting. And what happened in 2020 is that when these mail-in ballots, got counted, the Republican lead at the beginning proves to be sort of a mirage. This is what happened in 2020. And then all of a sudden, Democrats came surging back. Something like this might happen again. Mail-in balloting is not as popular as it was in 2020, but certainly among the youth who can barely be, bothered to vote in the midterms, they are using that a lot. So what happened in 2020 is that this Republican mirage, it evaporates as time goes on, and that creates even more distrust in the U.S. system. So we are looking at almost certain victory of the Republicans in the lower house, and then in the upper Senate, they only need to win one, flip one seat, and there are between four and maybe as many as 10 close races. So certainly it seems like they're going to be able to do that. But viewers should know that it's very possible that it might be close, that it's very possible that runoffs might be needed. It's very possible we may not know the final outcome for weeks in advance. We might go into December. It's important to know that there are many people who are just dead set on denying the election results if they don't win, period. Even if they don't have proof, no matter what. And why do they have that? You guys just played a clip of Biden talking about how, for what he's been saying for 2 years, basically that if my party doesn't win, the other side doesn't have any integrity. The other side is dangerous. There has been this demonization of people of both sides by both sides, and it's really led to a situation where it's very combustible. And then you are talking about a system, with this new era of mail-in voting and this new certainty, a near certainty that unless it's a blowout, we're not going to know who's going to win for days or weeks. And that creates situations, where, for example, a poll came out last week that 9 out of 10 Americans are expecting political related violence. And, both sides here, that clip that you played of Biden, fear-mongering about the integrity of the system, he's just as guilty of it, in my opinion, as Trump is. Both of this pointing the finger is very, very corrosive. And it's useless, and it's wrong, because Biden is talking about the integrity of a system where people here don't believe the system has integrity. The problem is the system itself. you have 61% of Republicans who think that Biden didn't win legitimately in 2020. Back in 2019, you had polls showing that Democrats believed the same thing about Donald Trump. No matter who, you know, this is the American way. If your side doesn't win, it's because the other side cheated. That shows that there's a problem with the system. You know, when you consistently have now a third of Americans believing that the other guy won by voter fraud, that this is not just a one-way issue, but that's what, you know, Democrats and Biden are trying to say about Trump and his supporters, but they're not really looking in the mirror because they made the same claims. Both sides have undermined the integrity of the system so much that you're looking at a citizen population that is disinterested, demoralized, and worried about violence. And when I say disinterested, voter turnout, it's always woefully low in the United States, and in midterms, it drops even more.
Well, thank you very much. Our correspondent, Ramin Mazahiri, joining us live from Chicago. Moving on, India says that it will continue buying Russian oil as it benefits the country, adding that trade ties with Moscow would keep going. India's foreign minister, Subrahmanyam Jayashankar, made the remarks after meeting with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov. It was the fifth meeting between the two diplomats this year. He said that India's decades-long relations with Russia have served both countries, and his trip to Moscow comes as U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen embarks on her first visit to New Delhi. According to reports, Yellen will hold talks with Indian officials about a price cap on Russian oil exports. India has become the largest oil consumer after China, following Western sanctions on Moscow over the war in Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Turkish energy minister says Ankara has started paying for some of its natural gas imports from Russia in rubles. Kiev accuses the Russian military of setting the stage for street fighting in Kherson ahead of an expected offensive by Ukraine to retake the city. The Ukrainian military says Russia is forcing civilians to leave the city, saying that this amounts to war crime. The military also says Russian forces disguised in civilian clothes are plundering evacuated homes. Moscow denies the accusation. It says that it is vacating the area to ensure the safety of the residents. Kherson is one of the eastern Ukrainian regions that Russia annexed after holding referendums there. The Ukrainian military is pushing counteroffensives to take back those regions and other Russian-held territory. Kiev's campaign has been propped up by Western arms. Ukraine now says it has received the first shipment of advanced surface-to-air missile systems pledged by Western countries. North Korea has rejected as groundless the U.S. claims that Pyongyang is supplying arms and munitions to Russia for the war in Ukraine. Pyongyang says it has never had arms dealings with Russia and has no plans to do so in the future. It says rumors of arms dealings with Russia are a hostile attempt by the U.S. to tarnish the image of North Korea. Last week, Washington said artillery was being delivered from North Korea to Russia under the cover of shipments to West Asia or Africa. Our correspondent in Seoul, Jennifer Chang, says that the U.S. has not provided any evidence for the claims about North Korea supplying arms to Russia.
Well, the U.S. has not really provided any evidence for its claim issued by the U.S. National Security Council spokesman for the White House, John Kirby, last week that North Korea is supplying Russia with artillery shells and ammunition for its war in Ukraine by funneling them through unspecified countries either in the Middle East or North Africa. And Kirby said he has an idea, the U.S. government has an idea of which countries those were, but he did not specify which ones, and there was no real solid evidence to support the claim. And in fact, the U.S. is saying that they can indeed stop these transfers of weapons from North Korea to Russia, possibly perhaps by delaying them in customs or holding them up there permanently. But it's very, very intangible, and the North Koreans got very upset.
China urges Canada to stop making remarks that damage bilateral relations after Ottawa accused Beijing of trying to interfere in its elections.
The relationship between countries can only be built on the basis of mutual respect, equality, and mutual benefit. And China-Canada relations are no exception. Canada should stop making remarks that are detrimental to China-Canada relations. China is not interested in Canada's internal affairs.
Canada's prime minister has accused Beijing of playing aggressive games to undermine democratic institutions in the country. It is a reference to media reports that China funded a clandestine network of candidates in Canada's 2019 elections. This comes amid a probe into the allegations that China used police outposts in Canada to carry out illegal security operations against Chinese nationals. China has denied the accusation, saying that the locations only offer services to its nationals. The European Union's goal of hitting net zero emissions may face hurdles as the bloc has turned to burning wood to meet its energy needs. European legislation has classified some wood products as renewable fuel, and that has funneled subsidies towards burning them. But activists say that wood burning releases more CO2 than some fossil fuels. Meanwhile, NGOs have warned that the growing demand for firewood will put forests at risk. Since 2005, Europe has transformed its energy system to renewable sources to hit its net zero emission target by 2050. This is amid concerns over global warming and high emissions. The issues are the main topics of the UN COP27 climate summit, which is underway in Egypt. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Leaders meeting with group of students. On Wednesday, 2nd of November 2022, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with hundreds of students on the occasion of National Students' Day and the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated in Iran both on the 4th of November each year. In this program, we discuss the leader's speech and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. The 4th of November in the Islamic Republic of Iran has been designated as the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance. It is also Students' Day in Iran, and on Wednesday, 2nd of November, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, met with a large group of hundreds of students, who sang a beautiful song for their leader. At this meeting, on Wednesday, 2nd of November, 2022, Artin Serai Daran was the special guest of the leader. The mournful young child had lost three members of his family in the recent terrorist attack on Shah Cheragh in the city of Shiraz in southern Iran. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei started off by saying, "The first topic I want to talk about is 4th of November. Well, you have heard a lot about it. 4th of November is a historic day. It is both historic and educational. When we say it is a historic day, it means that on this day, there were events that will be recorded forever in our history. These events cannot be forgotten, and they certainly should not be forgotten. They are educational, because there have been reactions as a result of these events that serve as a lesson for us all." The leader poignantly added, "This day is an important day for us. But it also really agitates the Americans. This is a day that frustrates the Americans whenever it is commemorated. This meeting today angers the Americans. They will be agitated by it. But why? Because this day symbolizes the evil and pernicious influence of the United States, and also is a symbol of American defeat. 4th of November proves that the Americans can be defeated." Knowing the enemy and the United States in particular tends to be a recurring theme in Ayatollah Khamenei's comments and remarks. From the point of view of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, the disagreements between Iran and the United States are deeply rooted and fundamental. From the leader's point of view, there is a huge gulf, a huge chasm, between US and Iranian politics and diplomacy, between US and Iranian beliefs, points of view, and historical experiences. The leader continued by saying, "Three historic events took place on 4th of November, some of which are directly related to the Americans, and others are indirectly related. One event was the exile of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, which took place on 4th of November 1964. Why was Imam Khomeini sent into exile? Because a law was ratified by direct orders of the Shah, and the parliament of those days rubber-stamped this law. According to that law, the Americans who lived in Iran were granted immunity from legal prosecution. According to this law, if an American national committed any sort of crime in Iran, they could not be legally prosecuted. So, for example, if an American happened to run someone over while driving a car, the judicial system in Iran had no right to prosecute them. Imam Khomeini did not tolerate this, of course. He gave a long speech. His voice recording and a text of his speech are available today. Because of this, he was sent into exile. This was an event that was directly related to the Americans. The second event on 4th of November was the killing of students. A number of children who were around your age were massacred, martyred in front of Tehran University. This sad event also took place on 4th of November 1978, just a few months before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The third event, which took place exactly a year later, after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, was the students' takeover of the American embassy in Tehran, what became known as a den of espionage. During that attack, many documents were found that revealed the United States' conspiracies against the Iranian nation. These documents show what the Americans were doing during the time they were in Iran, that is, from around 1949 or 1950 onwards. It shows their conspiracies and their acts of treason against the Iranian nation. Further comments, the leader referred to the American and British-backed coup d'etat of August of 1953. On 19th of August 1953, a national government was at work. Mohammad Mossadegh's government was a national government, and the issue he had with the West was about oil. Mossadegh was neither a cleric, nor did he claim to want Islam. It was just about oil. The country's oil was in the hands of the British. He said, "Our oil needs to be nationalized. We have to control our own oil resources." That was his only crime. The Americans staged a coup d'etat, a very bizarre coup d'etat. There are some vague things about that event in my mind. I was 14 years old at the time. I have read the history behind it, and I'm aware of the details. The Americans sat and conspired against Mossadegh and crafted a coup d'etat. Even though Mossadegh trusted the Americans, he trusted them, he even liked them. He thought that the US government would support him against the British, but they actually stabbed him in the back. Turning to the topic of US conspiracies and plots against Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei asked rhetorically, "Is there anything that you had the ability to do against the Iranian nation in the past four decades and that you haven't done? Whatever they didn't do was because they weren't able to do it, or because it didn't benefit them. They did whatever they were capable of doing. They supported separatist groups at the beginning of the revolution. They supported the coup d'etat attempt at Nuzhehr military base in Hamadan province. The Americans showed support for the blind terrorism of the Munafiqeen, the MKO terrorists, which led to the killing of thousands of martyrs across the nation. They supported the savage Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein during the eight-year imposed war on Iran. They provided Saddam with weapons, intelligence information, and aid. The war was provoked by the Americans, and they were the ones who forced Saddam to initiate the eight-year war. The Americans shot down an Iranian passenger plane, a commercial airliner, over the skies of the Persian Gulf, which resulted in the death of over 300 innocent Iranians. And they did not express any regret or apologies afterwards. They even rewarded that criminal general who shot down the Iranian commercial plane. They honored him with a medal. This is how you have treated the Iranian people. You imposed sanctions on the Iranian nation since the first year of the Islamic Revolution. You imposed the most severe sanctions that history has ever witnessed in the last few years. They admitted this themselves. They also tried to fuel unrest and sedition in Iran. They fully supported the seditionists during the unrest of 2009. Prior to that, Barack Obama wrote to me saying the US wants to cooperate with Iran. Obama was in a sense swearing that they did not wish to overthrow us. However, as soon as the sedition of 2009 began, they started to support it, in the hope that the sedition might go somewhere and bring the Iranian nation to its knees. They wanted to overthrow the Islamic Republic. This is how you treated the Iranian nation. further remarks, the leader of the Islamic Revolution referred to America's assassination of the top Iranian general, Qasem Soleimani. The leader said, "You Americans openly declared that you killed our fearless general. You murdered him, and you were proud of it, and you announced that you gave the orders." Mata Soleimani was not just a national hero, he was a regional hero. Mata Soleimani played a major and unparalleled role in solving the problems of several countries in this region. "You martyred this great man and his companions, Martyr Abu Mahdi al-Muhandes and several others. You supported the Zionists, the Israeli regime, which assassinated our nuclear scientists. The Israeli regime martyred our scientists one by one, and you supported them. Not only did you fail to condemn them, but you actually supported them. You have frozen billions of dollars of the Iranian nation's assets in the United States and in other countries. If this money was at the disposal of the hard-working Iranian government, like the current government, it would be able to do great things with it. But you have frozen these assets and you're keeping them. This excludes the assets that were frozen in the United States since the beginning of the Islamic Revolution. America's fingerprints can be seen in most anti-Iranian events, and they claim that they empathize with the Iranian nation. They said this again yesterday, that they sympathize with the Iranian nation. They are, of course, lying. This is complete insolence. Of course, they have shown great hostility towards us, but the Iranian nation, getting the better of them, has thwarted many of these hostilities. Some of these events are still with us. We have not forgotten them. We will never forget the martyrdom of the great general Qasem Soleimani. They know this. We have said some things about this, and we stand by our word. Well, the America of today is the same America of yesterday. The America of today is the same America of August of 1953. It is the same America that helped the Iraqi dictator Saddam. It is the same America of the past few years, with one or two important differences which we must pay attention to. First of all, the enemy's tactics have become more complex. We need to pay attention to this. The hostilities remain the same, but the method of applying these enmities is different and more complex. It is not easy to untie the knots. You need to pay attention. You need to be alert. Of course, we trust our own children, our own youth, and our own officials. We know they're capable of dealing with things that are complicated, but it is complex. This is one difference. Secondly, that day in August of 1953, and even until the beginning of the Islamic Revolution, the US was the dominant power in the world, but that is not the case today. This is one important difference. Today, the United States is not the world's dominant power. Many of the world's political analysts believe that the US is declining. It is gradually fading away. We aren't the only ones to say this, of course. We have the same opinion, but the world's political analysts are also saying it. The signs are evident. The United States' domestic problems are unprecedented in the economic, social, and moral spheres, as well as their internal conflicts and the bloodstained divisions inside the country. In further remarks, the leader of the Islamic Revolution said, "One of the things that I'm saying this now, and some other people across the world have also said it, I believe that one of the signs of Americans' decline is the election of people like the current and former president of the United States. A country of 300 million plus people, almost destroys itself and elects a president in the previous term, somebody like Donald Trump, whom the world considers to be crazy. And after he was defeated, a man like this current president comes to power. And well, you know the stories about him. This is evidence of the decline of a nation. This is evidence of the decline of a civilization. So, this really matters, and it is related to America." The United States also played an obvious role in the recent riots that took place in our country in the past few weeks. The announcement made by Iran's intelligence ministry and the IRGC intelligence organization is a very important announcement. In concluding remarks at the end of his speech, the leader of the Islamic Revolution talked about Iran's role in the new world order. The leader said, "What is Iran's role in this new order? Where will Iran be placed? What position will our dear country hold? This is the thing that you need to think about. This is what you need to prepare yourselves for. This is the thing that the Iranian youth can work on. We can have an outstanding position in this new world order. We really can. Why? Because our country has outstanding features that many other countries lack. First of all, we have very talented human resources. We have really good human resources. The intelligence and talent of young Iranians is higher than average intelligence and talent the world over. Today, we are seeing the outcomes of intelligence and talents of those who were born in the 1980s and 1990s. The young people and those who are making innovations and updates in various scientific and technological fields are allowing the country to rank among the top 4 or 5 in the world in a number of disciplines. These are the same people who were born in the 1980s and the 1990s. Their effort is really bearing fruit today."
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
There is a very profound hadith that I find to be very interesting. When Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He says, wearing nice clothing takes away worries and difficulties. My point is that when Islam and in the Ahkam talk about physical dressing, and there's lots of things about, you know, I mean, there is a book of Alama Tabatabai that's been translated by Sheikh Tahir Jaffer, who came last year, I think, for Muharram here. Not here, but virtually. Amazing scholar, did amazing work. Still works very hard out of I think, Africa. And the book is called Sunan al-Nabi. It's online, it's available, you can buy it. It is an entire book on the very, very minute details of the Prophet's life. Everything from the colors he wore, to the side of the body he slept on, to the way he used to comb his hair, to the length of his beard, everything. I mean, a lot of effort has been put into collecting these ahadiths. All to avoid the idea that Islam has nothing to do with the physical. It does. Surah Al-A'raf, has a beautiful verse. Allah describes a town in this verse. وَلَوْ أَنَّ أَحْلَ الْقُرَىٰ If this town, what town that is, it doesn't matter. If this town, آمَنُوا وَاتَّقَوْا They had, if they believed, and if they were pious. لَوْ يَنَ If they were pious, if they believed. If the people of this town were pious and believed, if they did all that, Allah says, لَفَتَحْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ بَرَكَاتٍ مِنْ سَمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ If they did that, God says, we would have opened up the doors of blessings for them from the sky and the earth. Follow the tafsir a little bit. آمَنُوا وَاتَّقُوا Belief, piety. These are internal realities, spiritual realities. Sometimes you don't know if a person is in a state of piety or not by looking at them. It's a very much internal state, absolutely. But God says the result of your spiritual reality is that I will give you physical blessings. Follow the connection now. God says, if they were, وَلَوْ أَنَّ أَحْلَ الْقُرَىٰ آمَنُوا وَاتَّقَوْا If they had belief and they were pious, I would open the doors of barakat, of blessings. Samawat, of course, is immaterial, invisible. But arth means there's rain, there's vegetation, there's food, there's water. Those are all blessings of Allah that are very physical. Meaning he's saying your spiritual state absolutely impacts the physical reality. So it is a two-way street, guys. Please don't tell me. It doesn't matter how I dress, Asad Bhai. Because there are some people to the point where not only do they accept this, they actually judge others. If a sister feels comfortable wearing abaya everywhere she goes. If a brother's beard gets a little bit thick. If, for example, he's talking to a non-Muslim in a parking lot and he's doing his best now to stand there with humility, with his head down, then instead of accepting that piety, accepting that level, they look to kind of shame it and bring it down. To the point where, why can't you look at me in the eye when you talk to me? Am I lower than you? No, sister, I'm trying to respect you. Why do you have to wear abaya everywhere you go? I don't understand. This is Canada. It's okay. Meaning, it, for some reason, their actions are a threat to somebody else. Why? Let them go through their journey. They've understood that, look, sometimes for me to ignite my spirit, I have to look at the parts. That's very much an Islamic reality. Don't forget tafheem, incorporation. We're trying to do that. Sometimes, from the external, to the internal. And yes, if we want to find out the levels, absolutely, the spirit is the command central of the existence. No doubt about it. When that salat infiltrates the soul, then we've done something. But there are components that are physical that we can't deny. God says now in the beginning of the month of Ramadan to refrain yourself from food and water with the hopes that by the time you get to the nights of Qadr, not only is the stomach fasting, the eyes are fasting, the heart is fasting, the ears are fasting, there's aqsam and levels and maratib of fasting, levels of fasting. But it starts off with the physical. If we don't understand a certain ruling, why do I have to wear this? Why can't I wear this? What's wrong with this? Why is this not included in this ruling? And we know it's from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Always understand one point. If God makes sense to me, if He's certain for me, and this ruling is under doubt, meaning I don't understand it, then for the sake of the doubt, take the certain. Let me explain. Somebody asked me, for example, same example I gave, that I don't know if I still have wudu. How do I find out? Very simple. What do you know for sure? I did wudu for sure. I don't remember if I broke it or not. Then you have wudu. On the flip side, I went to the washroom, but I'm not sure if I did wudu afterwards. Then do wudu. Meaning what? Drop the doubt, take the certainty. Drop the doubt, take the certainty. When it comes to Allah and His rulings, if the ruling doesn't make sense to you, God does. I know enough about God that I know that He would never do anything that would put me in a state of oppression. So take that certainty and leave the doubt alone. Look, I'll give you one more example. I'm throwing examples at you guys. One more example. Let's say, for example, you know this brother's character. He's a good brother, pious, God-fearing, God-centric, great father, great husband, a mu'min brother, helps out, mashallah, everything. And everything you know about him is khair and good. And somebody calls you and say, look, just to let you know, I don't mean to burst your bubble, but this friend of yours, Mr. Piety, I saw him in a very difficult satanic position just a half an hour ago. Coming out of that place or with this person or blah, blah, blah. You will resort to what you know about him, not what they're telling you. You'll say, look, because I know him very well, I'll give him 70 excuses. I won't all of a sudden now destroy everything I know about him because of your one report. I'll resort back to what I'm certain of, not what your eyes of doubt have told me. When it comes to God, we have to apply the same principle. Not everything that comes from God will make sense to us. I'm sorry. There are things that are controversial, that don't make sense. Why? In 2021, that's fine. You can question, you can doubt, that's fine. But when it comes time for you to actually follow a ruling, resort to what you know about God, not what you doubt about Him. You know that He is merciful. You know that He's obsessed with your success. You know that He has done so much grace to bring you towards Jannah. Thousands of prophets, ma'sumeen, the parents, the Quran, the ulama. What hasn't He done to ensure your success? That much we know about Him. If this ayat, if this verse, if this fatwa doesn't make sense to me, that's okay. But He does make sense to me. Resort to what you know. Take the certainty, leave the doubt. If you do that, that doubt becomes certain after a while. Then you understand, okay, now I know why He did that. And a lot of you have gone through that epiphany. I know you have. In your beginning teenage years, why am I doing it? Why am I doing it? Why am I doing it? There were years I used to have this pit in my stomach for the month of Ramadan. I would fear it. I'd get Ramadan Kareem, Ramadan Mubarak. I'm like, no, I don't like Ramadan. It's tough for me. After many, many years of me doing it, now I start to realize why Allah says this is the most beautiful month of the year. Now I know why people would cry when Eid was announced. I don't want the month to end. One more day, one more day. But that's after a while. After that doubt becomes certainty for me. A lot of things Allah asks from you physically, from my sisters to my brothers, that you may not agree with, you may not even understand. Resort to what you know. You know Him, allow Him now to take over that discussion.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith through action. Sunday, the 5th of Ramadan, 1394, the 22nd of September, 1974. A faith that is accompanied by wrongdoing does not bring forth safety. A faith that is not accompanied by moral duty will not grant aid to the believer. It will not guarantee his success. It will not invoke God's help and the help of the very atoms of this cosmos. It will not grant him salvation or felicity in this world, and, in a word, it will not grant him paradise in the hereafter. The vain thoughts that spring from seeking a life of ease try to convince us that the opposite is true. One of the traits of the human being is that he is always looking for an easier way to do things. This state of desiring ease is something innate to humans. If you give a person a choice between two actions, all things being equal, they will choose whichever is easier, whichever requires less effort, whichever needs less investment. This is a human trait, and people usually live in this manner. This is what is known as taking the path of least resistance, the easiest route. So, from this point of view, religious faith looks like it means giving up this paradise of ease. However, if we genuinely want to find ease, we should sit down and make sure we have the formula, We should sit down and make sure we have the formula right for this. The formulas that tell us that a lazy person who never does anything for anyone can go to paradise, what will it take for us to see that this cannot be right? Are we going to wait until we don't go to paradise to notice that the formula is wrong? So I am saying let's look again at the formula right now to see whether this is really going to give us the result we are after.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
As well as the Quran, which is our infallible guide to the truth, there are also countless narrations from the Imams which state that their intercession cannot be attained except through striving and effort. Now, we think we can sit here despondent about our past, present and future, accept humiliation and do nothing to change our condition, and hope for intercession even after the Imams themselves have said that their intercession is not for those who do not strive. Do you see how these narrations contradict what we imagine to be the case in our minds? One night, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is worshipping in the mosque. He is weeping. This is someone who, according to a correct understanding of his life, was constantly striving so that truth would reign supreme. But at night, he was also constantly striving to serve God and humble himself before him. He would cry, shed tears, and call out to his Lord. Some of his supplications are truly amazing, although now is not the time to dwell into these. Then along comes a simple and naive man who says to the Imam, O son of Allah's Messenger, why do you weep? When you have such a father, such a mother, and such a grandfather, all of whom were chosen by Allah, leave weeping to us. You are the son of Allah's Messenger, the son of Ali, the son of Hussein, the son of Fatima al-Zahra. What do you have to cry for? Now Imam Zainul Abidin wants to defend the following thesis, that humbling oneself before Allah, weeping to Allah, worshipping and supplicating to Allah is to polish the soul, to make oneself more determined, to make oneself more reliant on Allah and not to slacken.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.